My first memory.
What's your first memory of?
My first memory is my mother, we were living in an apartment building, and my mother telling me, don't go up the stairs without me. Don't climb to the roof. And I was like 3 or 4. And as soon as she turned her back, that's what I did. I climbed the stairs all the way up to the roof, and she was really upset with me. It's my first memory.
So would you say that set a tone for your life of rebellion?
Yeah. Okay. I was always disobedient towards my mother. And then, let's fast forward a little bit.
What's your first memory of understanding the presence of God?
When I went to Hebrew school.
Yeah?
Yeah, actually my mother made me go to Sunday school, Hebrew school, every Sunday. From the time I was just like 8 years old or something, 8 or 9 years old. And we had to learn Hebrew and the Bible and everything. And then I got bar mitzvahed when I was 13. Bar mitzvah is like the Jewish ceremony. It's like the coming out party for Jewish boys. And, let's go back a little bit. So, one of my Hebrew school teachers told me his father had just died. So he made the remark to the class that, you know, class, there's no God and nothing happens at the time of death. This is in Hebrew school.
In Hebrew school.
And I was shocked. I mean, I remember it to this day. I said, you know, what? You know, this guy's teaching Hebrew school, you know. And I actually always believed in God. But whenever my parents made me go to a religious ceremony in the temple, you know, the Jewish temple, then I would take my comic books with me to read. I would put the comic books inside the hymnal. Like, that time it was Superman and Batman and everything like that. Just because it was so boring. I mean, it was excruciatingly boring to be in the service, and the kids were all boring. And they made me wear these suits, a wool suit you had to wear in those days. And it was so itchy, it was like torture. I just hated it. I just hated to go to religious, to the ceremonies. And then, anyway, my parents made me go to religious school. Then I got bar mitzvahed when I was 13. And we had a big party. But basically, I mean, the big party was you're supposed to drink. I wasn't interested in drinking. And you're supposed to dance with girls. I mean, the only girl I danced with was my mother. My mother had sent me to dancing school previously. And I was the first person to ever get kicked out of Fred Astaire dancing school.
First?
Yeah, because I stepped on all the girls' toes and they told me to leave.
Wow.
Yeah, I wasn't good at dancing. Anyway, so then I went to Hebrew school and got bar mitzvahed. And after bar mitzvah, what happened? Oh, yeah. The only thing that was interesting about bar mitzvah was collecting the money at the end. So I would stand in the door and wouldn't let anyone get out until they gave a present for bar mitzvah. It's interesting. This is my first sankirtan. Because later on that money got given to the Hare Krishna movement.
Really?
Because most of it was in bonds. They were kept until I was like 18 or 20 years old. So I basically cashed the bonds and gave it to the Hare Krishna movement when I joined.
Wow.
Pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
So anyway, then what happened that I went to school? Anyway, school, nothing happened at school. But then when I went to high school, I was studying, got very interested in science and engineering and everything like that. And I scored a perfect score on the science board, you know, the college board, 800. People were shocked. I got special awards in high school for being the top of the class, special, you know, all sorts of things. You know, perfect scores on all the science tests and everything like that.
Mathematics. That was science and mathematics.
Science and mathematics, yeah. And then I graduated from high school. I didn't go to the prom because I wasn't interested. I just found all those things boring, like the girls were boring. And just the whole romantic things. And my friends, even when I was young, My friends were always talking about sports and everything like that, different teams and the names of the teams and the batting average. Primarily was baseball in those days. And I didn't know any of that. And I just, my friends would ask me, you know, what do you think about, you know, Joe DiMaggio or someone like that? I said, who's he? And he said, what's wrong with you? So, you know, I just really wasn't interested, even though I got some baseball cards, you know, just to be able to play with my friends, you know, trading cards. But I still wasn't interested in the whole thing. It was just extremely boring. I was very, very much interested in electronic stuff. So I would just like build different radios. In those days, you didn't have phones or anything like that. And, in those days, actually when I was young, they just had like black and white TV and it was a round tube in there. It wasn't even, you know, the big screen TV or anything like that. And they didn't have color TV at that time. So really, I don't remember watching much television. Although they did have television. My brother was 3 years younger than me. He actually watched a lot of television. He became a television addict. So much so when my parents took the television away, he drilled a hole in the wall so that he could watch through in their bedroom their television. He was so much addicted. He would watch like 8 hours a day or something like that.
Wow. Pretty. And
he
became with a diet.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he got taken in the Matrix. So, anyway, so then what happened then? Then after that I decided to go to study engineering school. So I went to Northwestern University to study engineering. And it was interesting in the tech school. It's also, there was only one girl amongst 1,000 men students in the tech school. In those days, you know, just, ladies just didn't take mathematics and science at all. So I went there, but then about a year or two into the university studies, I just thought, you know, like, I was looking for the truth in life through mathematics, engineering and science. But then I found out about my professors, they were just as ignorant as anyone else was. So I just thought, you know, this is not the right field. You know, they keep changing the theories every other year. The professors, they're just like, you know, they were just interested in eating, sleeping, mating and defending just as much as anyone else. They were just like sophisticated dogs. So then I switched my major to philosophy, and I was still trying to find out what the absolute truth was like, and philosophy, religion, and I just couldn't find any saintly persons, what to speak of, answers to the questions I had.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
You mentioned you've always believed in God.
Yeah.
But you had this great attraction for science and technology.
Yeah, because I thought I could find out the absolute truth. It was a search for the absolute truth.
So, you know, in many circles, those seem to be antithetical.
Why?
How did you...
No, many scientists are actually quite godly, like Einstein, Newton, and others. You know, because when you see the order of the universe, how things are functioning so nicely, it just reinforces your faith in God.
And so that happened to you?
No, I always had faith in God. Whenever I wanted something, I would just pray to God for things.
So you always saw science and technology as aspects of God's energy?
Yeah. Yeah. So then, all right, let's see what happened. Oh, yeah, then I thought religion would answer my questions. So then I started studying religion, and I found out it was just a hodgepodge, and people didn't know what they were saying. They all had different opinions about different things. No one knew who God was, what happens at the time of death. You know, basic ABC answers. Nobody had any answers for those things. And it was just very, very confusing. You know, I just couldn't find the answers out. You know, and previously I'd become a vegetarian, and I told you that story, how I became a vegetarian.
Please tell it again.
That, you know, one day my mother was cooking tongue, and I went into the kitchen and asked her, what are you cooking? And I looked in the kitchen table, and she said, tongue. And I looked at it, and it really was a tongue. And I said, Mother, it's a real tongue. And she said, of course, I would never make anything artificial or anything that's canned or frozen for you. Everything has to be fresh. And then I ran to the bathroom. I looked at my tongue. It looked exactly like the tongue on the table, except just much smaller. And then I said, Mother, that's it. You know, I'm not going to eat meat anymore.
How old were you at that time?
Oh, something like 18, 19 or something like that.
So it was after you had left for college?
Yeah, after I left for college.
And the tongue was from which animal?
Cow. It was a big tongue.
Had you ever met another vegetarian before that?
No.
So you were the first vegetarian that you knew?
I think I met some Mayor Baba people who might have been vegetarians before. You know, in my search for different things, I used to go to these Mayor Baba meetings sometimes, but it was just so mundane. There was nothing spiritual there.
That was in Chicago?
No, where was that? In Miami later on. And then later on, let's see what happened then. All right. So then, you know, when I was finished with the university, I thought, well, let me go someplace where there is real culture. I thought Europe, you know, Europe is where culture comes from. You know, naturally, you know, the Greeks were there, and the French, they're so cultured, you know, they appear so cultured like that. And I had studied some French in the university and also in high school. I thought, let me go to France. So I was looking for the cheapest price, and then it turns out the cheapest price to fly to Europe was from Nassau in the Bahamas to Luxembourg. That was on Icelandic Airways. You probably heard of that before. Mm-hmm. So I took Icelandic Airways from Nassau. It was very cheap, like $100 or something like that. Well, in those days, money was worth a lot more than it is today. And then I flew to Luxembourg, took a train around France, discovered that the French people didn't like my French because I didn't speak with a French accent, and they were yelling at me for speaking improperly.
Wow. And then, can be that way.
And then I went to Marseille. I was in Marseille. I just remember this very clearly, just sitting in my hotel room. And there was another American man with me. You know, we traveled together or something. We met up in Europe. And then hearing coughing on the street below, and I said, what's that coughing I'm hearing? All night long, all these different women were coughing. And he said, those are the prostitutes. I said, prostitutes? I thought Europe was cultured. You know, the Americans sometimes have this illusion about Europe, you know, Big Ben and the changing of the guards and everything is just like, and the churches there. You know,
museums.
You know, you just have this like, yeah, the Louvre in France. You just have this illusion about Europe, which is really crazy. And so then I said, but they're just eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. This is even before I came across Prabhupada's books. I had this concept that material life meant eating, sleeping, mating, defending. I said, that's all that's going on here. So I remember just like running out of my motel room and just going in the middle of the park in Marseille and walking around all night long. You know, what am I going to do with my life? This is the same stuff is here that is in America. And then I immediately went back to Luxembourg, to the next flight, back to Nassau. Called my father, because come in our plane, pick me up. So my father landed in Nassau, picked me up, took me back to Miami. So then, I thought, you know, what am I going to do in Miami now? You know, I don't want to get a regular job. You know, I got to do something with my life. Got to make some money.
Excuse me, major was later on in college, philosophy.
Religion.
Major in philosophy. Not
well, in no, I didn't. I never actually graduated. I got enough credits.
Oh, okay.
But not in any one major.
Okay.
You know, I just kept switching majors, which is kind of stupid. But anyway, so it's interesting, isn't it? And then what happened is, anyway, so I went back to Miami. What am I going to do? All right. Then I took some courses in the University of Miami. And there, some devotee gave me a back to Godhead and a sweet ball.
What kind of sweet ball?
Simply wonderful. And then I walked away and then the devotee harassed me until I gave a donation. And made me give 25 cents, and I was so traumatized by that.
Really?
Yeah, having to give money.
You didn't want to give even 25 cents?
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah, because they had just given me something, and then the money comes afterwards?
Yes, a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like a gift. Somebody likes to treat you.
Yeah.
And after that, oh, pay me for that.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, otherwise if they had said, you know what, are you interested? We sell these for 25 cents. It's a different thing.
That's different. That's different.
That's quite a bit of difference. So I was just really traumatized. And then I read this magazine about, it had something about Lord Jagannath crying or something like that. And I just said, this is too weird for me. And that was my first contact with devotees. Well, I forget what year that was. All right, then I thought, well, I got to do something after I took some courses. Let me do something to make money. So I started driving a taxi in Miami. And it was pretty good. And as I was driving a taxi, you know, we started talking philosophy with the taxi drivers because, you know, it turns out that many of the taxi drivers had PhDs and things like
wow,
that.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Were they from South America?
Because no.
They're very educated.
No, these were just like normal Americans. There weren't any, at that time there were no Haitian taxi drivers or Spanish speaking. These are all just normal
late
Americans.
Late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah. There weren't so many immigrants then at that point. And so, you know, I was talking to the taxi drivers, and then one of them gave me a Krishna book. And I read it, and after I read it, I couldn't stop thinking of the little blue boy stealing butter and feeding it to the monkeys. I just thought, you know, I'm going crazy. And then I heard Prabhupada chanting on the radio when I recorded it, and I was just very attracted. And of course, also my sweet Lord I heard chanting at the same time. So I was very attracted to that. So then what happened is there was a temple in Miami somewhere, and I sat down and ate some fruit there at the temple, but I didn't want to join. And then some of the other taxi drivers who were actually interested in Krishna consciousness said to me, you know, let's go visit some temples and stay at some temples.
Wow, that's wonderful.
So we drove up. First temple we visited was in Boston, Massachusetts. So this story I've told several times. So we go into the temple in the evening. He's like, can we stay here overnight? They said, sure, you can stay in the basement. So they put us in the basement. I think it was the winter and it was unheated in the basement. And so, you know, I had a sleeping bag, so it really wasn't too much. So I wake up in the morning and I said, you know, where's the toilet? And right in the middle of the room, there's this toilet with a curtain around it or something like that. And they said, there's the toilet. I said, but where's this toilet seat? And they said, no, you stand on it. And I was thinking, how do you avoid falling into it? How do you stand on a toilet? And they said, this is weird. And then I looked around and I said, where's the toilet paper? And they said, use your hand. I said, oh my God, what's happening? I think fortunately I had some tissue paper, you know, that I used the toilet. I took a cold shower in the middle of the winter in Boston.
Wow.
And then finally I go up to the temple room and, there they are. There's everybody dancing in front of some figures on the altar, jumping up and down. Men on one side, women on the other side, which is kind of weird for an American, you know, to have things divided like that.
Side by side, not
side by side. But it's still weird to have, you know, women separated from the men.
It's the way it is in shul. It's the way it always was.
Not when I went to shul. I went to Reform shul.
So did I. But to Bethel.
No.
Men on this side, women on this side.
No. No, there's pictures of my bar mitzvah. You can see that everybody was together. Anyway, so, and I said, this is weird. They're jumping up and down. Then they had some ceremony after the RT where they all go up and talk to the deity.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, to reveal what they had done during the week. And then there was Tulsi worship, which I just saw. You know, they were just kept running around. Let me save the battery on this. I'll just put it on airplane mode. They kept running around
a bush,
bowing down to a bush, and I said, oh my God. You know, Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom. Of course, it hadn't come out at that time, but anyway, it was something like that.
Yeah.
The impression I had, I said, get me out of here. And then the person giving class told us we were going to hell unless we joined.
Really? Was it Armorander?
No, not in Boston.
Oh, in Boston? Who's that?
I don't remember. And then we went to Washington, D.C. and visited that temple afterwards. And the temple president didn't wake up until 9 o'clock in the morning. I was up earlier than him. I said, these people are hypocrites. You know, they have a morning program, and everyone has to go except for the temple president. So this is not a, I'm not going to mention it. He is also the GBC. And he didn't get up until 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm not going to talk about it. It's better we don't bring names. No. So, and then I went back with my friends to Gainesville. So then we went to the temple in Gainesville, and then Amarendra was giving class, and he was reciting all the symptoms of Kali Yuga and saying, you know, unless you join, you're going to be short as anything, eating human flesh, living underground. I said, you better join because Kali's coming. And he said, and he looked at us and said, frightening. And then previous to that, I had just come to the...
Narendra?
Amarendra.
Amarendra, okay.
And so previous to that, I had gone to the temple one time to read a book, and I was told that I wasn't qualified to read the book, that they had to preach to me. I wanted to read Isopanishad, and they said, you're not qualified. You have to hear from us first.
Wow.
I said, I just want to read. Am I allowed to read? And they said, no. And then...
Similar to my experience.
And then, alright, and then I spent the next 6 months avoiding, 6 months or a year, I forget exactly how much. And I would still those other taxi drivers had become devotees like me. I was following regulated principles and chanting and everything like that, vegetarian. And we all moved in together at a farm right outside of Gainesville, Florida, where we were renting a farm. And, let's see, I had money, so I was maintaining them with money. You know, somehow or other I had money. I don't know how I did it. And I was...
You wouldn't even give a devotee
25 cents. I was cooking for them and everything like that. And then these are the friends I visited the temple with, the temples, like in Boston and Washington, D.C. And then we had notice... Anything else before I joined the movement? Oh, yeah. Then we got notice. This is interesting. The Prabhupada was coming in a week to the temple. So I thought, well, I got to do something with my life. So what happened is I just, like, walked into the woods. And I just said, I'm going to get lost in the woods, and Krishna, you're going to have to help me, you know, decide what to do with my life, because I don't want to join that movement. But I don't want to stay here in the material world with no purpose in life, just take care of these moochers. So, you know what a moocher is?
Oh yeah, I know only too well.
I don't want to take care of these moochers. So I just went into the woods in the night. You know, I could have gotten lost for days, because this was like real woods, forest and like that. And snakes and everything, because it's Florida. And alligators. And in the woods, I had this vision of the super soul. You know, four hands and Krishna.
Wow.
Four hands, Vishnu. And he communicated with me, you're supposed to join the movement.
Wow, so wonderful.
And then...
This is a great moment.
Yeah, that was like a turning point in my life. Mm-hmm. And then he guided me out, right out to where I was supposed to go. Not the temple, because temple was miles and miles away, but to where I was living. And then that next morning I told the devotees, the other two people I was staying with that weren't devotees at that time, I said, I'm joining the Hare Krishna movement. And they started to get really angry with me. One of them actually punched the top of his car and put a dent in it. No, it was gaudy. So he punched the top of his car and put a dent in it. He says, no, you have too much karma. You have to work out your karma first. Using the philosophy against me. And I said, wow, these are friends. I don't need enemies, you know. And so then I walked in the door of the temple and said to Ridhananda Maharshi, who was temple president, Ridhananda Das Adhikar, he was temple president. I said, I'd like to join. Can I join? He tells a story in a joking way. He said that was the last time I was humble. In my life. Yeah, he says that. He says the last time I said anything humble in my whole life.
He would never say that in front of somebody like me or
Yeah. No, I was joking. And then at that time I had long hair, like, I looked like Satchasai Baba with a beard on, with a long beard and long hair like this, you know, cause I had, see, I had really frizzy hair, like a black person. And so, cause even before that, when I was young, to keep my hair in check, I would sleep with my mother's stocking on my head, you know, to straighten up the hair. You understand what I mean? But then every time it would rain, it would just like frizz up again. Anyway, so there was a lot of hair. And he said, Rina Anamarsha always tells a story that he couldn't see me. There was just a little face in the middle. It was like the wild man of Borneo. And then immediately I just shaved it off and chanted my 16 rounds, which I've been chanting, you know, every day faithfully since then. And 2 days later, these two friends of mine very sheepishly walked into the temple and said, we'd like to join too. Because they had no one to take care of them or pay their bills. And they joined, and one of them was so attached to his hair, we had to make a trick to get him to shave up. We had the devotees trim it a little bit on one side, and then it wasn't equal with the other side, so we had to trim the other side to make the first side, second side equal to the first side, and that was too short, and they had to keep shortening both sides.
Oh, that's so funny.
We did the same exact thing to Yadana Prabhu in New York.
Yeah.
When we wanted him to shave up for the movie that we were doing.
Yeah.
So he said, we'll just cut it short. So we cut it short on one side. Oh, it's uneven, so cut it short on the other. And eventually just shave it.
Shave it, yes.
So then, so they moved in the temple, and we were getting ready for Prabhupada. And getting ready for Prabhupada meant that we had to get some lotus flowers for Prabhupada. And the lotus flowers, they were in this lake called Lake Alice, which is full of alligators. And so we went swimming in this alligator lake to get lotus flowers for Prabhupada. And so then Prabhupada flew into Jacksonville. Prabhupada flew into Jacksonville, Florida. And we had devotees, like, I guess on the second floor or in the roof or something, throwing flowers when Prabhupada walked up. And it was a momentous moment in my life, because at that moment, when I saw Prabhupada, I realized that he was my eternal spiritual master. And then I had to just, like, give up my false ego and stay in the Hare Krishna movement, regardless, and dedicate my life to him. So Prabhupada walked into the temple, and he offered... Before he got in the temple room, there was this picture of Dwarkadish. This is the same picture that's on the cover of the Krishna book. It's either number 2 or 3, when you had a 3-volume set. And Prabhupada offered obeisances to the picture outside of the temple room. It's interesting. And then Prabhupada walked in the temple room. The temple room actually has a picture of Panchatattva. There's no deities. Picture of Panchatattva, the dancing picture of Panchatattva. Prabhupada offered his obeisances, and we had a reception for Prabhupada. And Amarendra had arranged that the university would pay an honorarium of $1,000 for Prabhupada to speak. And that was a lot in those days. So Prabhupada spoke at the Plaza of the Americas in the University of Florida. And that night I went on a television program with Prabhupada. There's a transcript of that called Transcendental Broadcasts that's available. And anyway, it was very amazing. I took a lot of pictures of Prabhupada with my camera, and all, I lost all those pictures, unfortunately. A lot of pictures. Mother Tulsi used to have a copy of one of those pictures of Rita and Anandamarsh holding an umbrella over Prabhupada's head.
That one I think I've seen.
Where did you see it? Because I took that picture. Tulsi may still have that picture.
I think it's on one of your
pictures. Yeah, Tulsi may still have a copy of that picture. And then, it was actually pretty amazing being with Prabhupada. Then that night after the television program, we all went into Prabhupada's room, and several devotees took initiation. Amarendra, Gayatri, Dharmadas, and there's another devotee who Prabhupada used to call the fat one, Bhagavat.
Amarendra hadn't been initiated yet?
No.
So he was bhakta something when he first...
Yeah, yeah. We were all friends before. We all knew each other from before, anyway. So then, Prabhupada gave initiation, and he was sitting in his room, just dressed in a gamsha, and Prabhupada was glowing a golden color. and he was handing out the beads. And the interesting thing is when he handed the beads to Bhagwat, Bhagwat took them with his left hand, and Prabhupada said, no, right hand. And Bhagwat didn't want to give his beads back to Prabhupada. He just clutched them like that, like Prabhupada was going to grab his initiation back from him.
Wow.
And then the...
Laugh.
What?
Prabhupada laughed when he saw that?
No. And then the next day, we all drove to the airport with Prabhupada, but I drove in the van behind that was carrying Prabhupada's Vyasa-san. And the Vyasa-san was probably as wide as this couch here.
Wow.
And it was, we had to have the van door open. It was practically taking up 1.5 lanes of traffic all the way to Jacksonville Airport. And when we arrived at the airport, we were actually running through the airport. There were like 6 of us carrying this big Vyasa-san running through the airport. Because Rita Nandamarsh didn't want Prabhupada to sit on an ordinary seat. And then Prabhupada just started laughing and laughing and laughing when he said, take it back. You know, this is ridiculous.
So
and then we saw Prabhupada off at that time. So, of course, then after Prabhupada came, Rita Nandamarsh said, all right, Rita Nanda Prabhu, sorry, because he wasn't married, he wasn't sannyasi then. He said, all right, you can be the treasurer of the temple. He thought, this is a way to attract me. You, the treasurer, I thought, oh, this is an ideal service. I'm good at mathematics and counting and everything like that. So the treasury was like the closet, you know, like a broom closet or something like that, where we kept all the money. So when I went in there, and it, you know, it took about 2 minutes to count all the money, because we didn't have any money. And he said, all right, now that you count all the money, you can go on Sankirtan. I said, Sankirtan? And there was a, you know, first time I've been wearing a dhoti and shaved head and everything like that in the street. He said, yes, go out and distribute the magazines on the street. And so it was very embarrassing to be out in a dhoti for the first time in my life in America, in this town that where people, some people knew us. So every time a car would drive by, I would make sure, see who it was, and then dive into the doorway, the nearby doorway of a store, just so the people wouldn't see me. And I was so embarrassed that the only people I would approach would be little old black ladies. And they were very generous, too. They were very generous. And so we'd go on Sankirtan. In downtown Gainesville, which is basically Deadsville. I mean, nothing's happening in downtown Gainesville. And so we go on Sankirtan, Hari Nam, and everything like that. And after 2 weeks in the movement, I decided Prabhupada was my guru. I mean, I knew before that, but I decided I wanted initiation, and I wasn't going to wait. So I wrote a letter to Prabhupada saying, you know, please accept me, without telling anyone, please accept me as a disciple. And what happened is that Prabhupada's servant notified the temple president, who happened to be Amarendra at that point, because Rita Nandamarsh had left. Rita Nanda Prabhu had left by that point and gone to Houston, Texas, or something like that. And so he notified him that what I had done, and Amarendra got so angry that I thought that was it. I was going to die that day.
Really?
Yeah, because what happened is we were cleaning the temple room. And we had this maha cleanup every day. And I would sweep and he would mop behind me. But this day he was faster than ever on the mop. And he was chasing me with the mop throughout the whole temple. Like to hit me with the mop.
Wow.
For going, you know, going above him to approach Prabhupada for initiation. He was really angry.
Wow.
He cooled down. I mean, our manager really had it as an anger thing. He got angry.
The mighty arm.
Then what happened is that, what happened after that? Did I go to New Vrindavan?
So which year did you get initiated, Michael?
Oh yeah, so then what happened is that, I heard that, they were starting a school in Dallas, Texas. So I thought, let me go there and help. And Sasrup Maharaj, who was the GBC, Sasrup Prabhu, he wasn't a sannyasi, he was the GBC, he wrote to, Amarendra, please send someone to help with the school. So when I heard that there was a school, I thought, oh, I'd like to take care of kids, and they sound cute. And so, Amarendra sent me to Dallas, Texas. to help with the school. And then what happened in Dallas, Texas? I was made the second teacher in ISKCON after the first teacher blooped. The first teacher's name was Ani Ruda. I think he's passed away by now. And I had five kids, 24 hours a day, academics. I was their mother, their father, academic teacher, and their parents were like, God knows, you know, hundreds of thousands of miles away. And they were crying for their mother all the time. And I had to deal with them in a temple. This was before we had the present temple in Dallas. This is a temple that's on a place called Turtle Creek. That, where we had 35 people living in a building with one bathroom. Men, women, children, one bathroom. And that was it. You can imagine the mad rush before Mangalarti. And I had to get all the children to Mangalarti on time, too. With everybody else using the same bathroom. And so, basically, that was extremely traumatic for me because I was so exhausted. I was falling asleep while I was teaching the children. The children used to have to come up to me and shake me and say, teacher, teacher, wake up, when I was trying to teach them. Five, six. And I was like 21 or something like that. Wow. And it was just like, I went before the deities. At that time, this devotee in the West Coast, Keshava, started distributing books, big books everywhere. So I went to Sasarupa Maharaj and I said, well, I'd really like to distribute books. And I prayed to the deities, get me out of here. So then we started the second book distribution party in the United States, which was, myself and it was a Bhakta John and one of the devotee, Visvareta. Yeah, Visvareta. I think Visvareta is still around. He was in New Vrindavan a while ago.
Did Bhakta John ever get initiated?
I don't know. And so we started distributing books, and we were actually competing. We were the second big book distribution party, competing with Keshava and some other people out of San Francisco. We distributed Krishna books. We go door to door and distribute Krishna books. At that time, we all wore dhotis. And then later on, I became the Sankirtan leader there. Yeah, in Dallas, Texas, I was the Sankirtan leader, driving the devotees on Sankirtan. Whew. That's an interesting story. I was really like Sankirtan. We had traveling Sankirtan. We distributed so many books. And when I was like 6 months in the movement, this is all the first 6 months of the movement, then I told the devotees to leave me on a college campus, and we just with a few cases of books, I said, Krishna will take care of me, and then I started preaching, we made some devotees, I just alone on a college campus, 6 months in the movement.
Which college campus?
Somewhere in Oklahoma, Stillwater, I think it was Stillwater, Oklahoma.
What?
University of Oklahoma, because that's near Texas. Yeah. Yeah, and then we kept, and then after that, I was sent to, did I leave anything out? All this happened in such a short time, it's just amazing. Prabhupada was visiting? No, Prabhupada came a little later. Did he come a little later? Yeah, Prabhupada came. And then I arranged, Prabhupada was coming to Dallas, Texas for the first time. And then I went around, I did all the publicity, and we had all the major televisions, radio stations, and newspapers greet Prabhupada at the airport. There's a video of that. There's a video of that. We arranged the VIP room at the airport, and Prabhupada was greeted like it was like paparazzi, you know, there for Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very pleased. And so had a whole interview there. That interview was, there's a video of that interview. And then after that, we brought Prabhupada a whole plate of fruit, prasadam. Prabhupada touched it. The rest of the devotees left and I ate the whole plate, including the orange rinds and peels and everything like that. Everything on the plate. And then we went back to the temple and Prabhupada installed Radhakala Chandri at that time. I was in the kitchen cooking for Radhakala Chandri. And Prabhupada installed Radhakala Chandri. And I arranged some other television interviews with Prabhupada in Fort Worth, Texas, which is right near Dallas. And then after Prabhupada left, after Radhakala Chandri were installed, Then I was sent to Houston, Texas, and Frida and Adamaraj had just left to, he was previously a temple president of Houston, Texas, but he wanted to take sannyas because he heard that Sasvarupa Maharaj was taking sannyas and some other people were taking sannyas. He says, why not me? So then he told the temple that I'm going to the West Coast to get some incense for the temple, help maintain the temple, but his plan was to take sannyas. So he drove to the West Coast with his wife.
Preached her the whole way, right?
Her the whole way, convinced her there's the best thing for her to let him take sannyas. So he went before Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I want to take sannyas. And Prabhupada said, what does your wife think? And he had his wife talk to Prabhupada and she said, whatever Krishna wants. And Prabhupada said, you are Krishna conscious. And then he took sannyas.
She was actually a really nice devotee.
She is a nice, she still is a nice devotee.
I met her in Boston.
That's Ananga Manjari.
She has like a couple of children in India.
Yeah, she got married again.
Her
husband's name is Bhadra. He's a very nice man. They were living in Alachua. So, Bhadra also has a place at Govardhan, so I see him all the time. So, anyway, so he takes sannyas. In the meantime, I'm in Houston, Texas, doing Sankirtan in the malls with this other devotee, Kusha Kratha. He passed away. Yeah, a long time ago. Kusakratha was distributing books and also he had translated a lot from Sanskrit to English.
This is not the same Kusakratha that translated the big blue Mahabharata, is it?
Well, it's Kusakratha who translates from Sanskrit, yeah.
And when did he pass away?
Oh, about 5 years ago or so.
Oh my God, I had no idea.
And so but Vridananda Maharaj was thinking, well, I need a traveling assistant. So let me take Birkrishna Prabhu, whatever. So Sasvarupa Maharaj let me go with him because I already had experience, you know, living by myself and living austerely. So he got this car donated by this devotee, Jitavrata or something like that. He donated a Volkswagen Bug. So Vridananda Maharaj and I took off in this Volkswagen Bug heading for all the universities in the United States.
Wow.
And the interesting thing is the first, he said, now you're traveling with a sannyasi, so we don't have to be so regulated anymore. And, you know, we don't have to do it, you know, regular deity worship or anything like that. So we just go in and we buy stuff from the supermarket and we just go Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. So we used to get these bags from the supermarket and just put them to our heads. Because Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, you know, buy regular, Thousand Island dressing. You know, all these things. You know, anything that didn't have meat, fish, or eggs, and obviously we were vegetarians. And.
What about Balagrani? Were you careful about that?
And not too careful about that one. And then, you know, but the preaching was going on. It was pretty ecstatic. But then he said, well, this is not so good for our consciousness. So now we have to get more strict about these things, and so we're not going to buy food cooked by non-devotees anymore. No oro wheat bread or anything like that. So you have to, he got a gas stove, like a white gas stove, not one of these propane stoves, you know, the gas stove that you pump, it has gasoline in it. White gas, that means without lead or anything like that. And so we would cook, I would cook on that little stove, and we'd travel on this Volkswagen Bug. He would sleep in the back and I would sleep in the front. And it was quite cramped. And then we would take baths either in the college dormitories, which happened to be open in those days because there weren't as many crimes. Or we would take baths from jugs of water. And we traveled around to different universities. Eventually, he and Sasvarupa Maharaj, hooked up with each other and I was assigned to book, programs for them in advance. So I would travel 2 or 3 weeks in advance, booking these Bhagavad Dharma discourses. Actually, I left something out. Let me go back a little bit. When I was in Houston, I forgot about this whole episode. This is before I traveled with Vridananda Maharaj. One summer, Prabhupada was coming. This is, I think, 72. Prabhupada was coming to New Vrindavan to do these Bhagavad Dharma discourses. So what happened is that they sent me because they needed help in New Vrindavan. They sent me to help and cook in New Vrindavan for Prabhupada and for the devotees. So I was sent to New Vrindavan to cook for Prabhupada and the devotees. And it was so austere there in New Vrindavan in the early days. You know, the first day I got there, I asked them, you know, where's the bathroom? And they said, go up the hills. There was a big trench. It was just a trench, an open trench with some sort of chemical below it so it wouldn't smell so bad.
Wow.
And you just have to stoop over the trench. Squat over the trench and do whatever you're going to do. And it was so cold that they didn't even have a bath place to take a bath. You had to go to the river with a milk jug and pour it over your head at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And there was ice and everything like that. So, you know, the first morning I get up and I'm just like shaking and everything like that. And on the way to the to the river, and I run into this Kirtananda, and he just says, it's so ecstatic having to bathe like this. Outside, and I said, this is insane. Because I'd never done anything like that before. I mean, afterwards, when I lived in New Goloka, I was taking baths outside. But in those days, it was like, you know, coming from a pampered family like that, we had our own boats and cars and everything like that. You know, I had my own sports car when I joined the movement that got wrecked up the first week. Because I lent it to a devotee, he smashed it. No, he's dead. Not from that accident, but from something else. But, you know, so I lost all that stuff. And anyway, it was very hard to live in New Vrindavan. And, we're just sleeping in the sewing room. You know, because there was very little room for everybody. So it was, anyway, sleeping in the sewing room. And Kirtananda would sleep in the same room. One day I was sick, very high fever. And Kirtananda says, what are you doing? I said, I've had fever. I don't feel well. And he hits me with a stick and says, get up. Best way to get out of a fever is to get up.
Oh, my God.
And so I get up, and he sticks me at chopping wood. And I was chopping a piece of wood that was so hard, you couldn't even put a dent in it.
It was the middle of winter, too, right?
No, this was the spring. Oof. I was chopping a piece of wood, and he says, what's the problem? He walks by. What's the problem? Why can't you have no strength? I said, I can't put a dent in it. He said, step aside, kid. And then he takes the axe, and he starts hitting it, and he doesn't put a dent in it either. And I'm laughing. And he just, like, steams away, you know, the steam coming out of his ears and everything. And I thought, I've taught him a lesson. Ha, ha, ha. But it was austere. And eventually Prabhupada came, and that was really nice. Seeing Prabhupada there, having Prabhupada's class every morning, cooking for Prabhupada. I got a chance to cook corn for Prabhupada. And people always said Prabhupada wouldn't like corn, but he loved American sweet corn. When Prabhupada said corn was not so nice, he was referring to the Indian corn, which is like animal food, basically. Yeah, and then we had Prabhupada's Vyas Puja that summer. And Prabhupada, I remember, it was there's pictures of it too, you know, Prabhupada being fan, these big Jagannath deities next to him. And then, Prabhupada was given a big cake, and he distributed the cake, and the devotee said, but you can't eat in front of the deities. And Prabhupada said, no, it's alright. And then there was a free-for-all. I mean, remember, we were like 20 brahmacharis high, pining, trying to get a piece of cake. I got a piece of cake, but anyway, it was like the biggest free-for-all you've ever seen in your life.
Prabhupada was
laughing the whole time, yeah.
So nice. This is so cute.
And that was the experience, yeah, that was another experience with Prabhupada. So, then Prabhupada was carried up the hill on a palanquin. It was so muddy there in New Vrindavan. Completely muddy. That was and Madhuban, the old temple of Madhuban. That wasn't where the new temple is. That's Madhuban is the old temple.
Yeah. It's all, the windows are broken.
It's a wreck now. That whole place is a wreck now.
You can see it on the road heading in.
Anyway, so then what happened then? Anyway, so let's go back. So then I at New Vrindavan, back to Houston, travel with Sri Dayananda Maharaj, preaching at the universities. Oh yeah, doing, ranging programs for Sri Dayananda Maharaj. It was a very nice time. But Rina Nandamarj would always change things. As soon as he got out the Atlas, then it was trouble. It was called the Rand McNally Atlas.
Please tell the story of how you met Fatima
Jafar Nandamarj. Yeah. Well, I can't tell that whole... That whole story doesn't belong in the book.
What?
So, how we kidnapped him and everything?
That's my favorite story.
No, that doesn't belong in the book. That's illegal. So,
I don't know the story anyway. If Maharaj does not...
Can you hit pause on the recording?
No. I told the story. No. You know the story already. So, so we were traveling around the country. I was distributing books. We were having a good time. But the problem was with Rina Nandamarj, you keep changing things. One time I was in El Paso, Texas, mm-hmm. arranging programs. He calls me up from Chicago or something like that and says, guess what? I've decided to go in the other direction. And I'm all the way in El Paso. I had to drive back to Chicago, and then we did something in Illinois or something like that after that. And after a while, I said, you keep changing things so much, I can't deal with it anymore. You got to leave me somewhere. So he left me in Chicago to be the temple commander in Chicago. And that was the first time I took care of Radhakrishna deities. That was in Chicago in Evanston. Actually, the temple was in Evanston. It was in an old YMCA in Evanston. There's stories about that when Prabhupada came to that YMCA. And so this is all like the first 2 years of the Hare Krishna.
Yeah, and for how long, Maharaj, have you been teacher? Like for
6 months at last.
6 months, okay.
Okay, so then what happened is that, alright, so he lays me as temple commander there. I'm temple commander of this big temple, the old YMCA. And then we installed Kishore Kishori in that temple. The deities that are installed now. But they were later moved to a different temple in Chicago. And then, who comes along but two rough and tough sannyasis, who are no longer sannyasis, one's no longer in his body, Guru Kripa and Yashoda Nandana. And they say to the temple president, who was Sri Govinda at that time, we'd like to have someone to take care of our deities. You know, this Veer Krishna, he looks really good. And so they said, we'll trade two of our brahmacharis for him. So in those days it was like baseball team, if you wanted brahmacharis, you trade. Now no one has any brahmacharis to trade, so. So they traded two brahmacharis and then off I went with Guru Kripa and Yashoda Nanda, who were, to say the least, quite rough and tough. They were just like talking more about women than anybody's ever talked to, I've ever heard in my life. And they were...
About devoted women.
Whatever women, it didn't matter to them.
Specific. They usually wouldn't talk about specific women, just women as a class.
Yeah, and in a very negative way. Mm-hmm. In a very negative way. Of course, one of them ended up getting married and he's driving a truck in Europe, and the other one fell down and he ended up shooting himself with a gun anyway, killing himself. Oh, is that? No, not them. No, sorry, not them. I'm thinking of two other sannyasis, sorry. One, they both ended up getting married, okay. They're nicely married. That, I'm thinking about the South American sannyasi that came later on.
Oh, right.
Yeah, erase that about those two. So then what happened is I traveled with them, but they were so rough and tough, and they're getting their brahmacharis to collect by saying any damn thing and doing other things, which I can't mention in the book. Then I said to them, you are both so much in Maya. I never met people in Maya as much as you.
Wow.
And these are two sannyasis. I was a brahmachari. And they said, look at each other. I said, what are we going to do with this guy? And they were capable of killing. Yeah. They were capable of killing. That's right. And so then I said, I'm leaving. I'm taking your deities with me. So I left and I took their deities with me. And we went to San Diego, where I became the vice president in the San Diego temple. And the temple president's name was Bhakta Das. So I became the temple president there. I leave out the stuff where I get married. I don't want that in the book. So,
yes, of course, whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, just what I did. So I was temple president, vice president for like 6 months or a year. And there I was also, actually was doing a lot of pujari work. for Radha Giridhari in San Diego. You been to San Diego?
Oh, yeah.
You have?
Many times.
When?
I lived in San Diego before joining.
I mean, the temple, I mean.
Yeah. You've been my sister still lives in San Diego.
You've been to the San Diego temple?
In Pacific Beach?
No, when it was in near Balboa Park.
That one I never went to because they moved to Pacific Beach before I joined the movement.
Anyway, so then I was in San Diego, and then all of a sudden...
Still
Radha Giridhari. All right, yeah, Radha Giridhari. Then all of a sudden, it was better it was in Balboa Park because it was right near the park, the zoo, San Diego Zoo. It was really nice.
There's still a lot of traffic on Pacific Beach.
Yeah.
Right by the beach.
Anyway, so then what happened... is that it, I guess after a year or so there, I got a call from Frida Nandamarge, said, I need your help in Mexico.
So nice.
So then I fly down to Mexico.
Mexico City?
Mexico City. Temple's a complete mess, and I said. And in addition, his ex-wife is there.
Is it the same temple you took me to?
Yeah. Temple's the same temple for years. And in addition, that his ex-wife is there, and his ex-wife is the head pujari, and he's the GBC. And
she was married already at that time?
No. Just she was a widow or something at that point. So then he says to me, he says, you have to be the intermediary because I'm not allowed to speak to her. So
that's so funny.
So every time he wanted to give instruction about the deities, he would say to that person... And she could hear what he was saying. Say to that person, this, this, this. And I would say, okay, person, this, this, this. And she would say to the other person, this, this, this. And I'd turn around and say, this, this.
That's so funny.
This, this, this. Who's that?
8552.
And then I said to him, I said, it's really not so good for your reputation to have your ex-wife here. He said, really? I said, yep. And so then he had her fly somewhere else. But then it was too much in Mexico City, so I went to Puerto Rico to help and stayed for some time there. It was a nice temple. It's in a place called Gurabo in Puerto Rico. And we helped there for some time. Then I went back. Where did I go with that? Phew. Where are you going?
That, just open this over there.
Then I went to again.
These are all clean dishes because we just wash and put there to.
Then I went to Gainesville. Why did I go to Gainesville? Anyway, then I went back to Gainesville, but that didn't really work out. Then I got another call from Rita Nanamaras. You see how much connected we are. He said, I need you to help me start the Spanish BBT in Los Angeles.
Start
it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So then I fly to Los Angeles and we start the Spanish BBT translating Prabhupada's books into Spanish. Was that the word? Yeah. And then I go to Venezuela to be temple president in Venezuela, where we become the number one book distribution temple in the world.
Wonderful. Oh, look at that.
And I'm in Venezuela until until Prabhupada leaves the planet, basically. Venezuela and the Spanish BBT, commuting back between both of them, until about 1977. And when Prabhupada leaves the planet, the devotees in Venezuela decide they don't want any more. That's where there were two other sannyasis, Venezuelan sannyasis. They don't want any more Americans there. So from one day on the most popular temple president, the next day you better get out of town because these two Venezuelan sannyasis were very much anti-American. And they said, we want Venezuela for the Venezuelans, for los Venezolanos. And so they kick me out. This is after Prabhupada left the planet. I go to Los Angeles. Actually, I was already in Los Angeles when Prabhupada left the planet because I was taking care of the Spanish BBT. That's where I found out when Prabhupada left the planet. And then, so then I'm permanently in Los Angeles. And they take over and they tell Frida Ananda Maharshi they don't want any gringo gurus there either, or American gurus. They're going to become gurus themselves. So they take over as gurus. It's like the first group of devotees actually to leave ISKCON and form their own movement outside of ISKCON. That was way before any Gaudiya Mouth group did anything to us.
How long did that last?
Well, I'm going to describe. And so then they tried to spread their influence to the neighboring countries like Colombia and Panama and other countries like that. So Rita Nandamars, he gets very worried and he says, well, he turns to me and he says, look, you've been recommended for sannyas anyway at the GBC meeting, so you must fly down immediately to Peru and take sannyas. So in 1978, the beginning of 1978, right after the GBC meetings, he has me fly down to Peru, and he gives me and another devotee, Jagajivan, sannyas. Jagajivan's not a sannyasi anymore.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time with him in India this year.
I mean, he's a nice devotee. So anyway, so he takes sannyas, and then I have to preach in Colombia, Venezuela, Ecuador, and Central America, like Guatemala, Panama, all these countries in my zone. So I was like regional secretary in all those zones. And in Ecuador, Guru Prasad Prabhu was there.
Who later?
No. So he was living in Guayaquil, Ecuador. I remember visiting him there. Anyway, it was and so that lasted about 6 months. And then I got a call from Rita Nandamarsh. You should come to Brazil. We have some really big preaching programs here. Okay, so I fly to Brazil, get there. I'm there one day, less than one day. And then he says to me, guess what? I have an inspiration. We should start a preaching program. We need to preach in America at the universities. So you should go immediately back to America. You know, here I was flying all the way across South America, which is a large continent, coming to Brazil, and then I have to fly back to America 2 days later.
Now, by this time, what had happened to those two evil sannyasis? They're not
evil. Those ones are evil.
Sorry.
No, they were still going on, but we had them contained to Venezuela. Later on, one of them became a truck driver in Europe.
Did they ever reconcile themselves with
them? Another one shot himself because he fell down.
But did they?
The one who's a truck driver is reconciled himself with ISKCON. Yeah.
Now the disciples that they made.
No, many of them joined Sridhar Maharaj and other Gaudiya movements, and some of them came back, but they started giving other Venezuelan people sannyas who were unqualified. I mean, the whole thing became a mess. We actually lost almost the whole yatras just being built up now after all these years.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, it was one of the best yatras in South America, in the world at that time.
Wow.
It was pretty amazing. Anyway, so... You know, we distributed, let's go back a little bit. When I was temple president, we distributed 35,000 big Bhagavad Gitas in 1 month in the city of Caracas, which is like 1.5-2 million people. And when I would go to Mayapur, I would sit in front of Prabhupada and I told him the scores, and Prabhupada was just like, his eyes opened wide. He said, they had, referring to the devotee who distributed, one devotee distributed 10,000 Bhagavad Gitas in 1 month. Prabhupada said, he has the mercy of Krishna.
Uh-huh.
And then Prabhupada, seeing the rest of us were envious of him, turned around and said, well, you all have the mercy of Krishna, but it's just like the gopis. They're considered higher. So Prabhupada had the last word. So then, all right, I mean, I forgot about that story. Then I go back to Los Angeles. Then I take sannyas. Then I'm in charge of the zone. Then I go down to Brazil. 2 days later, you know, 1 day later, he says, now you got to go to America and start a traveling party. So I said, all right, you're coming with me. So we both fly to America after 2 days in Brazil. You know, I barely see the farm in Brazil. You know, you think you fly all the way to Brazil, you'd be interested in seeing the farm and Rio and everything else. I didn't. All I saw was the Sao Paulo temple and the farm, just barely saw the farm. All right, so we fly to America, and then Prabhupada, I'm not Prabhupada, then Rita Nandamarsh convinces each of the temples in the southeast zone where he's the zonal acharya, because at that time we had zonal acharyas, to give a man for our party. So we started this traveling party, we had a motorhome and everything like that, and the first place we went to was Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
And we rented an apartment right next to the hospital. I started preaching there. It was the upper floor of a building.
Yeah, those buildings are still there. They've been converted to graduate housing.
Yeah, so the upper floor of the building, we rented it, and we had a little center there. We're going out to the university and preaching Krishna consciousness all the time. Then, after that, what happened after that? What a blank. Oh yeah, then after that I went to India, and then it was decided, they put pressure on Rita Nandamars that I should become the temple president of Miami. Now we're like 1980 or something like that. Things happen quickly. Especially when with Rita Nandamars, things happen really quickly. So many changes. And so anyway, so I become the temple president of Miami. It was in Coral Way, which is West Miami. West Miami was a little garden place and everything like that. And the temple president there, Narahari, he's going to Hawaii. That's why they needed a new temple president. And the devotee, he was trying to take all the devotees with him. But fortunately, Rita Nandamars was the zonal guru, so he was their disciple, he was their guru, and he told them not to leave. Especially there was one lady, Mother Tulsi, who was supposed to go with him. And he said, you should stay. And she was really angry at him and me. She said, what are you guys planning? And he said, well, I'm your guru, you should stay. And she was so traumatized that we had to put her in the garden. It was gardening. You heard this story, right?
Yeah.
But so she was gardening, but she was really a Sankirtan devotee.
Tulsi?
Tulsi, yeah.
Yes, I hear that she was excellent.
She was an excellent Sankirtan. So she was gardening, and I just thinking, I want to get her on Sankirtan. Why is she gardening? And I said, I want you to go on Sankirtan. She said, but I have all these plants and everything like that. So I said to the man who was operating the tractor, it's called the bush hog, I said, just plow them all under. I mean, just bush hog them. Just make sure you're making a mistake. So she runs to me and says, Mars, They destroyed all my plants. I said, oh no. I guess now you'll have to go on Sankirtan.
So nice.
So then she went on Sankirtan, and then I had massive competitions between the men and the women in Miami as to who would distribute the most books, and we became the biggest book distribution temple in North America at that time.
Wow.
Bigger than Los Angeles, actually. I mean, we were distributing so many books. Each person, like, over 100 books a day, some days. Mm-hmm. Like, okay. Massive competitions. Anyway, that's enough stories for now.
Beautiful stories.
All right, and I'll save that, and I